All right. What the Buddha designated as the divine abiding. Or the illimitable. The unlimited abiding. And these qualities that I mentioned before. Qualities of metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, or metta, friendliness, kindliness, non-contention, non-fighting, karuna, compassion, to sense the suffering within us, around us, to be able to resonate with that in a way that helps alleviate. Mudita, sympathetic joy, the capacity to rejoice. To respond to the beauty. To the good fortune and open to that, and upekkha, equanimity, serenity, to be even-hearted, serene, even though fully in contact with the vicissitudes, the fluctuations, the ups and downs of life. It is said that this is the natural, these responses are the natural responses. When the heart is unfettered, unobstructed, natural responses to the world, to contact. And we've all had moments where these qualities seem to be there, not because we try to do anything. But when we're willing to open to and be with that general friendly quality of heart. I'm sure we've all experienced that. Willing to welcome into our space, into our heart. It's easy to do that with a friend. This quality arises. It's useful to notice where it arises easily. That quality of well-wishing, friendliness, willingness to be with. We might notice it with a grandparent. We might notice it with a child. Our dog, Jack, is very good at allowing one to experience metta, kindness. Because one can't help but to want to bestow happiness. To welcome that form, even if, when he's smelly, even when he's done what isn't necessarily praiseworthy. So what is that quality? So to notice when that quality arises naturally. Or compassion, I'm sure we've all experienced that when we're touched. Someone's humanity or an animal or a being's feeling nature, their struggle, their circumstance touches us. We're open to it. And last night, Tanisha was talking about the AIDS pandemic in Africa. You know, some beings, a couple who are HIV positive, and which was a major thing, them even just having the courage to get tested. And now the child is quite sick, and you know, one can't help but wonder, gee, if the child's positive too. We were taking them to the clinic, and in going, when they go somewhere, the Zulu people in our area, they want to dress up. Even going to the doctor when you're not well, you dress up. And it was so poignant just to feel this family as we took them to the clinic for the child who was really unwell, just seeing a beautiful mother who's positive. Still aren't the signs yet in her of the disease really building up power. This beautiful mother. The father is struggling more with his health, but we've been helping boost it. This little child who wasn't well. And just all that situation, all that feeling, all that. Can't put it into words. It's not a thinking thing. One feels. Just seeing them waiting as they got out of the car to join a huge queue, probably line to wait at the clinic. Just feel that. Open and resonate with that. It's an example of a moment of feeling with. I'm sure we've had moments like that. Sympathetic joy, which I was speaking about, how that's more rare in the world because there's so much worshiping of self, elevating of self, the winner, the me, the competition, and the ruthless competition, the jealousies, the envies, when there's such reality given to the separate self. It's not so easy to remember the web, remember the interconnectedness. So it's more rare this being able to rejoice. But it also, we all know that it does arise on its own. We notice it sometimes with our family members. We notice it with our group, or with our nation, or with our. Sometimes we can notice, like with children, hearing children laugh, that sound of joy, rejoicing. Unless, I suppose one could be, you know. Oh, they're making so much racket over there. If it's interrupting my meditation, maybe, or if it's racket. But notice if one hears the beauty, say, of that laughter. You can resonate with. One of the common places that sympathetic joy arises naturally is in nature. See beautiful forest, tree, flower. For many beings, that's the time when we naturally resonate with the beauty. Creates a wider, more spacious sense of being. That's why it's called a divine abiding. It's more spacious, more illimitable. It's not so often that we think with nature, look at that tree, he thinks it's so strong. Let's see what you're thinking when my chainsaw comes out. You'll be wood soon. You know, I mean, we don't do that with nature so much because nature doesn't create so much the sense of self and other. That there's a sense of opening, resonating with the sunset. Resonating with that full moon that was coming out. Notice that's the essence of rejoicing. The beauty becomes, we partake of it, open to it. why nature is very soothing to the spirit. Many beings access a more natural, uncramped, unlimited dimension of our being. But it's more difficult to access that with beings. We see another person, and so quickly, me, you, comparing, habitual tendency. And upekkha, we can have moments of equanimity, moments of being at ease with the changes, with the perfection. In these moments, the heart is not being obstructed by greed, not obstructed by aversion, not obstructed by delusion. There's been some talk in the questions, and sometimes people wonder that, like the first part of the retreat, we've been cultivating presence and stability and calm, and then in investigating the changing nature, the suffering that comes from wanting security in a place where there isn't security because nature is flux. When we really recognize that flow, that change, and we relinquish that grasping, relinquish that demand that the changing world be other than it is, that one starts to experience the space of the heart, the peacefulness of the heart, the emptiness of the heart, the dimension of the heart that spaces, recognizing the changing nature of forms, ungraspable, the truly ungraspable nature of a form and thought and feeling, etc. And some people have been wondering, isn't that quite cold? Won't we be just, and if we mentioned it in a talk right now, won't we just be it might be polished, but won't it just be a polished enlightened doorknob? You know, just kind of cucumber. Stone. It seems disconnected, so we can be frightened of the space of the heart because it seems like a nobody. When I was growing up, that was the biggest in Tennessee. That was the biggest devastating comment on you as a person. But I have any personality. Mm-hmm. It's devastating to be just boring, empty. So I grew up in a place where many of us manufacture. You manufacture enthusiasm and drive, and so it was an incredible relief to also have permission not to always be so enthusiastic in the monastery. And going to a university in England for a while was quite a change. Everyone's hugging and this and that. And in England, you hadn't seen someone for 6 weeks. And, you know, back on holiday, hello. And they said, hello. sometimes the space can be frightening. God, what will I be in there? And yet, Ajahn Chah gave this lovely, lovely image. We don't have one, but he said, really, this practice in our being is like a bell. You know, the gongs, those lovely gongs like that. You could look at it and just say, just sitting there, a bit of a waste of space, isn't it? Just sitting there. But something touches that gong and it goes, wong, resonates. Looks just like it's sitting there and it's empty, but it's responsive. It's able to respond because of that emptiness. Touch it. Bong. Yet if we really have a problem and are so frightened of that emptiness, we can think, you know, it's a waste of space. Let's just put something in there. And that's what we do with our mind when it's empty. You've got to, who will I be? What will I be? I've got to remember to do that and don't do that and do that and don't do that. And it's like putting our clock in the gong and putting our notes in the gong and putting our rules in the gong. And you've got all these important things right there on hand, and then when something touches the gong, clunk. Clunk. And when we're feeling sometimes full of where I'm going and where I've been and where I've got to make sure I don't go, and then we touch suffering, we're not in touch. We're so full of our preoccupations, our stuff. And so I think Chao would talk this way, so we're not afraid of our emptiness. We're not afraid of our space. And the divine abidings remind us that this is about the space that allows us to make contact, allows us to be in relationship. It's not an emptiness that just shuts off everything. That's not true emptiness. That's called a polished up higher version of aversion. It's pushing away. The first divine abiding is a very special quality, metta, friendliness, the friendly heart. We can wait around for these natural moments, or we can, as the Buddha encouraged us, we can cultivate these qualities. Cultivate these spacious abidings. He said, if someone even cultivates this quality for a short time, even the time it takes to draw milk from a cow. Someone does it even for those short moments, they can call themselves a disciple of the Buddha. You know, sometimes we're thinking, you're worrying, gosh, this path is too hard, and I don't know. Remember this teaching when you're getting discouraged. I can be kind and cultivate kind. How long does it take, he said, to pull? This seems like a strange image. It only occurred to me this morning that it has some beauty in it. How long does it take to pull on the udder of a cow? Not someone who can do that for that short amount of time can call himself a disciple of the Buddha. Because that milk, what comes forth, the nourishment, the fruit of that, is something very special. This quality, the Buddha said, of doing that, as we touched this morning in the morning recitation, softens the heart. The opposite of metta is the far enemy, or the opposite is this contention, fighting, pushing away, aversion, creates walls, protecting us. There's all sorts of reasons why we've done this, to protect ourselves. We push things away. But then that leads to a sense of alienation, doesn't it? Leads to feeling I'm here and everything's out there. Leads to all sorts of defenses. A moment of metta is a moment of including, allowing, being friendly and allowing a thought, a feeling, a form into the heart. It's not attachment. It's not pretending like we love everything. That's why some people just think, let's just do the real practice. No, but the metta is okay. The Buddha had to offer something for the old ladies. Okay, okay. But come on, let's do some real stuff. May I be well, may you be well, may all beings be well. I mean, come on. What does that really have to do with anything? And then we get in there and go right back into the meditation, the real thing. And yes, if one is just trying to fabricate, just pretending that everything is all just wonderful, But the I was very grateful. We had a teacher that that taught us the seed, the essence of this principle is learning not to fight, learning to include, not pretending you like everything. It's just like everyone who comes to tea, you don't have to like, don't have to agree with all their opinions, don't have to approve of the way that everybody looks, but you can still welcome them in and give them the space. Sit down. It can still be what they are. Very grateful we had a teacher that encouraged us to start with ourselves and to start with not even trying to pretend we like ourselves, we love ourselves. To practice with, it's like the sound, like that jet. Push it or include as a part of our abiding. That's not disturbing our abiding because we've welcomed it into the abiding. The visitor that's coming. It doesn't mean to say we have to like it, not like it, but the abiding is included. Yeah, the sound around us. You could think, sound shouldn't be allowed to interrupt my morning talk. But notice with that, the enemy of metta creates a limited abiding. Start putting, having our policemen around. Keep any noises from being made. But notice what happens, metta include, okay, bird sound. We're allowed. Noises. Sensations. Notice what happens if, you know, it doesn't mean to say we just, oh, I like that one. I don't like that one. We can have metta even for pain, discomfort. It's here. It can be allowed. Not fighting it. Welcoming it. So the stability of the abiding doesn't depend on what the sensation, the thought, the sound, the feeling, the circumstances. The stability comes from that willingness to include, to not fight, to be in contact with. So you've got a spaciousness of the heart that's willing to be in contact with. What if I don't have any metta? I don't have any metta. Like Arthur last night. We can have metta for not having metta. What happened when Arthur just allowed himself to notice and make contact with the conviction, the hardness in his heart. If I don't have any metta, I'd break his neck again if I get the chance. Just to hear that, allow that, not fight it. It's there's no obstructions to this. We can cultivate it with just the thought to keep helping us reorient ourselves, to allow, not fight, include, peacefully coexist with. Notice it keeps taking us to a bigger and bigger place. Through the body, through memories. Oh, but what about the distracted mind? Let the distracted mind be allowed. Breathing in, not fighting. Breathing out, allowing the sound, the memories, the aversions, the pleasures. The Buddha taught that this sort of practice softens the heart. And to really, not just to blindly believe this, but to really consider this stunning statement of the Buddha, that someone who even practices this for a few moments can call themselves my disciple. Don't underestimate even a few moments of this including. Why is that so powerful? Why? What is that milk? What's that milk about? The milk which can nourish us, nourish our Dharma roots, nourish our true nature. Our delusion has cramped us into this tiny little compartment. through grasping at what is mine, what I like, and then rejecting what I don't like. And for a moment, this metta, through including what we've rejected, is helping to dissolve some of these deluded barriers. It's more guiding us more back to this unlimited spaciousness of the heart that's not cut off from form, but that is fully able to resonate with form. Later this morning, at about 10:30, Tanisha will guide us in the meditation. It's just a simple one. Just give a feeling of how to work with it. This is a very, very, very important practice, and there's all sorts of blessings that can come from this practice that the Buddha enumerated to encourage us to give it a chance. He said, when we really make a lot of this practice of learning regularly to note where our heart is, note that there's attachment. Note that there's aversion. And so we're going to come back to the friendly heart, the heart that's willing to make space for, willing to allow for, willing to welcome, willing to include. He said, when we do this and make a lot of this, there's 11 attendant blessings that naturally will start to grow in our life. He said that if we do this, you'll start to go to sleep more easily. Be able to let go and fall asleep more easily. Because the heart's used to being at ease with things. We'll sleep more peacefully. Be less disturbed little by little by little. We're talking about real practice. It begins with that moment of kindness. But when we make much of this, and little by little our dreams become less disturbing. Because this quality seeps into the different aspects and dimensions of our being. We'll learn to wake up more at ease, more happily, the more we cultivate this quality. Oh, well, I don't know about that. I mean, I still wake up. I've been called, I still wake up. Sometimes Tanisha and I, when we get up, our morning mantra is, it's too difficult. And she'll say, it's too difficult. And I'll say, it's too difficult. Because the back aches in the day. But can we remember at that moment, can we even remember to, rather than just obliterate that with a heart attack cup of coffee, or just to have a metta for the sense of it's too difficult. Allow that state to be included. Little by little by little, in the different moments, the different states, we'll go to sleep more easily, wake up more peacefully. You become dearer to human beings. The more we practice this, notice what's happened. We first practice with our feelings, our sounds, our space, and then the forms around us, the beings around us, getting used to having moments of just allowing ourselves to receive another being. Not trying to pretend how we feel, but just allowing in a friendly way, not harboring ill will. Just allowing, having moments of noticing. We can be sitting here, them, me. Even a moment of we. A moment of may you be at ease. May I be at ease, keep breathing in. May you be at ease, breathing out. Just for a moment letting the consciousness have a wider abiding that's giving space, not demanding. Friendliness gives some space. We create the circumstances for those of us who are struggling with relationships and wanting that very important. It's a beautiful blessing in life to have a good friend. And those of us, when we struggle with not having that in our lives, the Buddha taught that we create the karmic conditions for that to happen by practicing this, by practicing befriending, by practicing being willing to be with thoughts and feelings and sensations and forms and the others. That creates the circumstances for this to arise. So we become dear to human beings. We become more dear when we've cultivated this to non-human beings, like animals. Some of you might have noticed that someone who has a lot of metta, who's a veterinarian maybe, you notice that the animals know that. They can sense sometimes someone who has a heart of kindness and they'll be at ease. This doesn't mean to say you do a couple of metta meditations and you walk into the lion's den. Just right off the bat. But to get this little by little, this trust of how this quality, when our heart goes out to an area, starts to have an energetic impact. When anger goes out to our body and struggle to our body and we try to willfully force everything, it has its energetic impact. When we have kindness and let the attention receive the whole of the body, notice the effect that has on the matter, on the psychology of this being we call ourselves. So when we practice this, it affects humans, it affects non-humans. The next blessing the Buddha talked about was being protected by the unseen beings. Over the years, I have an experience, a sense that, yes, that's true, but that's just my experience. Rather than just immediately to reject it or blindly believe it, just let that touch consciousness and be open to that. The Buddha talked about there's more subtle beings, heavenly beings, that also have a lifespan, but are quite radiant and committed to goodness. And he taught that these beings guard and protect those who've really deeply, deeply accomplished this practice. Can't prove it, but I look back in our life, can consider many situations where there seemed to have been some mysterious force that came in and helped us. Just something to ponder. I don't have time to tell you the story now, but like when our hermitage just got saved from being totally destroyed by a fire, an incredible fire, it really seemed like some sort of intervention. That story for later. And also other protective qualities that just to ponder, not to blindly follow, but that the more we cultivate this quality, it has an effect on violence. It can have an effect on the violence that comes towards us. Just to ponder that, open to that. In other ways, I had the memory. I remember once as a monk on a train, some rowdy football fans, they'd been watching some soccer matches in England, got on the train, they were drunk, they were rowdy, they were violent, and I was just a target. So I was just sitting minding my business with the parchment on the train, and they actually had a table in front of me. Their ringleader set his butt on the table, right in front of my head. He wanted to fight. And I practiced, not thinking, let's practice metta, but I just practiced letting them laugh and making fun, you know, letting them do their thing, and keeping contact, but contact in a friendly way. And it was so amazing. And by the end of that train journey, we had bodyguards. We take care of ourselves now. We had bodyguards after they saw that their taunts and making fun of us and this and that, but I'd laugh at their taunts and they started wondering what we're up to and even asking about the celibacy, and he said, "Celibacy? I'd rather call up my mom." And we just... But But it's the interesting that, you know, had we, have we taken a different tack, or kind of piling on, contending, I don't know. I think it would have been very different. It's a small example. Okay, it's in little ways that we work on this, little ways, of noticing the difference between fighting something and psychologically, it doesn't mean to say that we go along with and do things that are harmful, but learning to let, to stay in contact and allow a non-aversion, not harboring your will, has a subduing effect on violence. Now, for those that were so convinced that this is just for old ladies and that the real meditation practice, the Buddha also taught that those who cultivate this quickens the concentration. Those who practice this get concentrated more easily. What's so interesting is when you're driving away, come on, I'm going for emptiness, nirvana. And then we get averse to sorrow, then we get averse to distraction, then we get averse to meditators that aren't doing it properly. Even averse to those who are doing metta, their vibrations might be getting in the way. You don't, you got to self-spur, and there's some energy there. The concentration, remember, the factors are ease and rapture and unification of heart. If you're having trouble with your concentration, guess what? Usually there's some aversion in there. Usually it's because we're knocking things out. You practice. What the sounds are the sounds, the feelings, the ubiquitous me. That's part of the family, okay? It's part of the family, part of the family. When we practice that allowing, it's that sort of mindset that gathers and becomes more easily unified. It's a very beautiful reminder. The Buddha taught it beautifies us. Now, wait a minute. With hard judgment, I know you might think, how beautiful is this guy up there? You should have seen him before. Or the next time when you really get angry, just look in the mirror quickly or say, tell your partner, next time I get in a rage, just take a quick picture of me. When you're in a rage, when the veins are bulging out of your head, when your eyes are just kind of that, when the jaw is kind of clamped, you just take a picture and just notice. And then notice what happens. Notice what happens when we're friendly and at ease. One can see the most leathered and wizened faces in Tibet that wouldn't be on the front of Vogue, and yet the beauty when the heart is kind. And the heart, the beauty, where does beauty really come from? And yet we've been hypnotized that it's all in the surface. Well, we know that, but it's part of the culture makes us so concerned with surface. This is interesting, beautifying feature, this heart of kindness. I don't know how many I've done. The last two is, yeah, and the last two is that if we practice this way, one can let go. Because kindness allows things to come and go. So there's more easily able to die peacefully. And in dying peacefully, one is reborn, or one can reappear if one chooses. One can reappear beautifully, reappear easefully, reappear happily. These are just thoughts, but they're encouragements by the Buddha that this emptiness of heart is not denying contact. The emptiness allows for contact that is unobstructed. And this first divine abiding is very significant. I encourage us to practice it today. First, in little ways, just welcoming, being with sensations, memories, thoughts, whatever comes. And then Tanisha will guide us later this morning in a way of still a simple meditation, but a systematic way of cultivating this so that it becomes really a home, a divine abiding. And out of this one, first one, all of them will come. The more we have the space to be with, then when there's beauty, we'll resonate with the beauty. When there's suffering, we'll resonate with the suffering. When we give space for things to come and go, equanimity can grow because we realize things are changing. It's ridiculous to get too excited about the in-breath and too devastated with the out-breath. When we really see, it's the nature of karma.